Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, let me grab the headphones. I'll get dialed into the studio. Get these dogs to shut up. Oh, goodness. I better close the window or the neighbors are going to get mad. Hope the guests call in tonight. Wonder if anybody's going to call in. Well, let's do this thing.
It's Rated G Radio, and this is your host, Garrett Miller.
Hey everybody, it's Rated G Radio, and I'm your host, Garrett Miller. For the next hour, we are live coming to you from downtown Huntington Beach, California. Our guest tonight will be calling in just a couple of minutes, Mr. Kurgan Edward Stout, author, new husband, father, and so much more. Really excited to have him back on the show. I haven't had a chance to talk with him for nearly a year, so we're going to play a little bit of catch-up as we get ready to go through everything. But earlier today, I had the chance to... Well, everybody knows that I'm working on a new album. So that being said, I'm doing a lot of homework after the show every night. And that seems to be when my creative juices are flowing, so to speak. And I've been in the studio all day recording music yesterday. And by the third song, you know, you'd think you'd just go in there and sing a song and in 3 minutes you're done. But it doesn't work like that. Apparently you have to sing on key, on pitch, in time, and, you know, some other particulars that my producer wants me to kind of, you know, work on. And we're working on what we call a rough track or a rough vocal, so we can just go ahead and lay down how the song, quote-unquote, should sound. So by the time I go and meet with my vocal coach, we can review how we can review really my performance and see how it sounds. But then he's going to give me tips on what I need to do to make it really, you know, superstar, spectacular, and all that good stuff. So by the time we'd finished the second song started on the third, my voice was absolutely shot. My timing and everything was gone. And Brian Pothier, who's my producer, says, okay, let's just pick this up on Monday. And I'm like, thank God, because I don't think I can sing another note. And he goes, well, clearly you're not singing a note now, so there we go. Anyway, so I came home last night, and after the show where we had Tarot Tuesday and Tarot Jeff on the show, very popular episode once again, my task for Monday is, you know, in each of these events that I'm doing, you know, like going into the studio, I have to be prepared. It's like going to school and having your homework. You need to be ready for class or whatever you want to call it. In this case, it's, you know, performance. And so Brian and I have worked on four songs, and the process that we have, I'll go into on a different night, but I needed to write another song. And so most of the songs that I write tend to be a little pop heavy or a little on the, you know, upbeat. They're not, you know, very ballad or, you know, sad songy type of a thing. And he's like, well, I think it's time you write a ballad. And I'm like, oh, Lord, that's not what I want to do. But that's what I did last night. And I'll tell you, I'm also doing a songwriting class up in Hollywood a couple of days a week with Harriet Schock, who is a multi-platinum selling singer-songwriter. She's written hits for people near and far. You'd recognize the name and list a mile long. And she has this great method that she teaches in doing this. So I said, you know, I'm going to, even though I'm going to class with her for that, and we're working on a very specific project that I'm very excited about, and it will probably end up being the last song on the album, the methodology is like, well, I'm going to start putting some of this into practice now. So I did that with the song last night and wrote it and was just like, holy cow, I think that it's so telling. And of course, I can't tell you what it is because we have to get it recorded and copyrighted and all that. But the song is so telling over my last few years, and here it is in, you know, 20 lines or less. So super excited about that. But that's what I did last night. Went to songwriting class with Harriet today, and after class after the radio show tonight with Kurgan in just a couple of minutes, I've got my homework for my next assignment. I'm very, very excited about that. It's weird going to a class and really enjoying the homework. And it's funny because she was commenting today, you don't know how many people don't do their homework. And I'm like, why would they come here if they're not doing their homework? What's the point of doing that? That makes no sense to me. Especially in a creative art experience like this, you have to do your homework. But we're going to find out about homework and so much more right now as we bring Mr. Kurgan Edward Stout back onto Rated G Radio. My friend, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I am so excited that we finally got dates and the lunar calendars matched up to get you back on the show. It's been far too long.
Well, thank you, and I love everything you're doing creatively, and it's great to have this chance to chat and catch up.
I know. This is cool. So for everybody who's listening tonight, this is one of those shows that I'm just going to call it a guilty self-indulgence. I could go and ask Kurgan out for a cup of coffee, and we're going to talk about his husband, Russ, and all of this good stuff that we're going to be talking about in just a minute. But I thought, you know, we could do this for a show, and I would kill two birds with one stone, but I can, you know, be the one that asks all the questions. I don't have to actually, you know, give up anything, because I can do that when I see Kurgan in person. So that's really the whole reason why I wanted to get Kurgan back on here, is he's got a couple of great books that have been out. Last year, after he was on the show, I got a chance to meet him and most of your family and friends that were there at the book signing out in Orange. I think it was Orange or Anaheim. And the thing that I tell everybody, Kurgan, is that I only save books that the authors actually write the autograph in. And when I moved, I have one box of books, of autograph books from authors. Your book is in there, and I actually know where the box is. That is a major statement in itself, but I kept it, and I love it. Your book touches my heart, and I'm hoping that you will talk about that. But the book that I really, well, that spoke the most to me was The Gifts Not Yet Given. And I need to ask you, both of your books right now, and I've had a glass of lemon water with no sweetener or anything, and I'm just like wired like a kite, so I have no idea what's going on. But I noticed on Amazon, when doing the link for your books, you've got them on a super, super deal.
Yeah, you know, Amazon does, they have their own kind of system, but they're definitely selling things in packages and things like that right now. I'm not quite sure what the discounts are, but both my first book was Songs for the New Depression, and that is out in hardcover, paperback, and ebook, and Gifts Not Yet Given is paperback and ebook, and they're both available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and all of the online retailers.
And so go buy both of the books tonight and help support the cause. So, Kurgan, what have you been up to in the last year? I know that we kind of stay in touch on social media, but it's so much better to hear it directly from your own voice.
Sure. You know, I think the biggest thing that happened to me, as you alluded to, is getting married. My partner Russ and I have been together over 12 years, and we've got two kids, and to be able to finally legally here in California take that step and get married was very important to both of us, and it's actually was really, we would have done it regardless, but once the Supreme Court decision came down, and our little one, Marcus, is jumping up and down, he came running into the room, and he's like, you know, when Domo was struck down and all that, he came in and he's like, come on, people, what are we waiting for? Let's go get married. And it just showed us that, you know, it was really important for him. You know, it was really important for him to have his parents recognized the same way any other parents could be recognized if they so choose. So it was a great step, and we had a lovely June wedding, and I was a June bride, although I wore a tux. And, you know, we had a great French-themed celebration, and I had taken Russ on one of his birthdays. I surprised him with a trip to Paris he'd never been before, and so we kind of took that as the starting point for our celebration, and so it had all kinds of French twists, and all the food was French, and we had French music playing when people were coming in with an accordionist and a singer, and so it was just a really nice celebration of love, and I think what was really important for me is I had no idea how impactful it was going to be for me personally, because, you know, you think about getting married, and of course it's an important step, but as somebody who is gay, when you've grown up your whole life being told, you know, you're either less than, or you're not normal, or you're sick, or whatever all that negative messaging is, to have this day where you are not only, you know, welcomed by your community, but really celebrated. We had this one moment during the ceremony where we had this empty vase at the front of the gathering, and everyone had been given a flower when they walked in. And to show our celebration of community, because we are not just a family, we're part of the community, and we have a lot of community support. We had people one by one in rows come up and place their flower into the vase and make this communal bouquet. And just that opportunity to watch each person one by one coming up to you and walking past and connecting with them, you know, and seeing the emotion and the celebration of love and respect. It was really empowering for me, and I floated on that cloud, and I'm still floating on it because I think, you know, no one, regardless of their sexual orientation, gets enough praise or celebration in life. I think we all go through a lot, and to have just that time where you're really lifted up really made an impact on me, and it really has had a lasting effect.
So if you don't mind, because if I can selfishly do this, I would really like to talk to you at length about every aspect of getting married and what it meant to your family. But really from all the important things like that, you know, your son's coming in and saying, let's go get married, hurry up and let's go get married. But the fun things and what gave you the jitters and, you know, what did you, you know, how long did you have to start planning in advance and what kind of cake did you get? And from, you know, because if you look back 5 years or 10 years or 20 years ago, anybody who's gay was going, there's no way we're ever going to get married. I guess we're going to have to settle for a civil union or a domestic partnership and just kind of hope that it all works out. And now, how many states do we have that have legalized gay marriage? It's like 15, 18, 21. I mean, it changes. It changes every week. And so for people in the LGBT community who thought, I could never be, and forgive me for using this word, so I don't need any hate mail, people, but, you know, I can't be normal like the rest of my family and get married, that those days are coming to a close. What did it mean to you, both personally and also to your family, to be able to say, you know what, we are going to get married? And why is that important to you, besides the fact that you just wanted to wear a tux and have, you know, pretty flowers on you?
Well, you know, I think for me personally, this was very important, and I'll tell you why. And this is actually kind of the topic of my next book. But my next book is a memoir, and it's really focusing on this relationship I had prior to the one I'm in now. And I was in this relationship for 6 years. We had a civil union ceremony, and although we called ourselves husbands and told everyone we were married, it had no legal standing. And even though we were registered as domestic partners in California, what happened to me was we decided to adopt. And we adopted a boy, a baby, an infant, Mason, my son, at birth. And we were in the delivery room, and I quit my job to be a stay-at-home dad and went under my partner's insurance and all of that kind of stuff. And really the plan was that this was going to be my life. I was going to be a stay-at-home dad and take care of our son, and we would then probably adopt another and then, you know, live happily ever after. And because of the legalities of being a civil union versus a marriage, shortly after our son was born, I discovered that the promises that we had made to each other in terms of how we were going to live our life together were not being kept. And I went to an attorney and said, you know, here's what I found out, and what do I do? And the attorney said, you know what? You need to keep your mouth shut about everything you just found out, because you have no legal standing to your son. Your ex, I mean, your partner at the time, my now ex, could have at any moment, because the adoption was under his name and we were going to then go through what was called a second parent adoption. The rules have changed since, but at the time it was a second parent adoption. And I was undergoing that process, but it hadn't been completed. And basically, I had no legal standing to my son, even though for the first year and a half of his life, I was the one who, you know, woke with him, kept him all day. We had a much stronger emotional bond than my then partner had with him. And, you know, I was really his touch point in life. And to know that I could have been pulled out of that situation at any moment and not had any legal standing was very scary. And luckily for me, you know, ultimately my ex agreed to let the adoption go through, and you know, I had, for 2 months though, I actually could not even confront him about everything that I'd found out. I had to basically remain, you know, silent and pretend like everything was fine, because of this legal quagmire that we were in. And so it was really, you know, an emotional time just to know that, you know, we don't have the same rights as other people. So now to be able to have the ability, at least here in California, to get married, you know, I jumped on that simply because, you know, I want the kids to be protected. And it's not so much about if my partner and I were to split up, but just to have the kids be protected legally, the same rights as other kids, is important. And obviously there's a lot of LGBT people out there who are single, who have no desire to get married, or couples who have no desire to get married, and that's great. You know, they teach his own, but for those of us who do want legal protection, to be able to have it is a huge thing. So I'm very grateful to have this opportunity, and I just hope, you know, the rest of the U.S. follows suit very quickly.
Well, it doesn't seem, I mean, it just, for, you know, 4, 5, or 6 years ago, you know, you'd hear that one state, or, you know, everybody was so excited when California passed gay marriage, and then, of course, it was taken away so quickly, and, you know, of course, now it's been reversed, but everybody thought, oh, California fell, now all the rest of the states fell, and then California went away. And so I think it was really kind of a blow to a lot of folks who just figured, like, all the dominoes were then going to fall. And it was funny, in the last couple of years, I mean, these states that you thought would never, ever pass it were passing it left and right, and here's California still trying to go, well, we're just still trying to figure out what we're doing. So, you know, I'm very excited for you and Russ to be able to make it official, make it illegal, you know, and be able to have that celebration. So as soon as, had you started doing any type of wedding planning before it was overturned and it was you were able to legally get married again?
No, you know, before Prop 8 came along, we kept getting a lot of pressure from all of our friends. When are you going to get married? You better hurry and get married. There's this window, you know, do it now. And I just thought, you know, we had friends who took advantage of that window and are very glad that they did. But for us, it just, I don't like feeling pressured into anything. I want to do things on my own timetable and make sure that the moment feels right. And Russ and I had, when we first got together, we had a very on-again, off-again relationship the first several months because, you know, I already had Mason, who was then 2.5, and wanted to have another kid. And he wasn't sure he wanted to be a parent at all. So it was very much a slow process for us to get together. And ultimately, you know, as we progressed in our relationship and it became clear to both of us that this is what we wanted and this was, you know, the thing to do, we never wanted to rush anything. We always wanted to make the choices that we wanted to make, but do them thoughtfully and respectfully. And so when it came to marriage, you know, we treated it just the same way. We wanted to make sure it was the right time. And so we thought about it, but ultimately, you know, during that window, we decided not to take advantage of it. And then, of course, you know, we had that right taken away from us. And so when the timing finally did come around again, we thought, you know, now's the time. And our kids are older. And as I said, you know, Marcus, our little one, was really pushing for us to get married. And we definitely wanted to do that. We wanted to celebrate not only our commitment to each other, but our whole family unit. And so we involved the boys in the wedding. They each had, they each got up and had written speeches as part of it. And so they were each, one of each was our best men. So
oh my
it was
gosh.
Very much a celebration of family. And you know, we really put a lot of time into it and thought about, you know, how do we make this special and how do we make this unique? And we don't want a cookie cutter wedding that you've seen a million times in movies. We want this to feel like special and unique to us. And so we wrote our own vows and we really thought about the different elements that would go into both the wedding ceremony and then the celebration afterwards as well. So we really put a lot of time and thought into it, and it came together quite well. So we're very happy with it.
Well, the pictures, I'll tell you, you know, they are, you had a great photographer, number one. I don't know who it was, but they did a great job on all of your family pictures and the event, the whole thing. But you just got such a feeling of love and happiness. And there, if I use the word serenity, that sounds a little silly, but there's just the serenity. There's a great picture of you and Russ, of you together with your kind of like foreheads touching. I see that, and it's just like, oh, it's peaceful. It's happy. It's right. And that's how that picture just speaks to me. But I think the pictures I like the best are the ones with you and the boys, you know, and you guys just all hanging out together. Everybody's dressed up, and you guys just look fantastic.
Well, thank you. I mean, all of those pictures were taken by a straight couple. Their names are Sarah and Ryan. They go by Sarah plus Ryan Photography, and they actually specialize in LGBT families and couples. They told me, I met them a couple years ago, and they told me they really feel a calling towards this community. They both have LGBT friends, and they really felt like a lot of photographers out there were just trying to shove people into these kind of heterosexist photographs, and they really wanted to capture the spark of who we were as people, and so they were great. And anyone who's interested in looking at the photos can go to Facebook and search for me on Facebook, and all those photos are out there for everyone to see. But we just had so much fun. We had the photos of us with the kids, and obviously the moments of the ceremony. And then one of the fun things that we did is to kind of carry out this French theme is we actually had the ceremony in our backyard, and we brought in this 12-foot-tall Eiffel Tower, and we had a couch with a mannequin dressed like a French supermodel on it, and it was kind of our photo booth idea. And so people were able to go over and get photos taken with Colette, our supermodel, and so we just had a lot of fun. It was just a great event, and one of those things that luckily we've got pictures, and I'm soon to be getting a video of the event, and just it's the kind of thing that made an impact on hopefully everyone that was there. I think we all walked away just thinking, this is a great new day, and thank God that we finally have the rights that we should have been entitled to all along.
Entitled to all. So, okay, so from a planning standpoint, who is in charge of all the details?
Russ and I really work well together. He is by trade a creative director for an advertising agency, and I have a lot of creative background as well. And so we really talked through together what we wanted, and then I worked with a wedding coordinator at the Bridal Event and Lounge in Tustin, and they did a great job of kind of pulling the elements together for us.
So my silly question of the day, because so this is really the only experience I have with people getting married, is like Father of the Bride 1 and Father of the Bride 2, and like maybe a couple of recent weddings, and I say recent, we're talking like easily 7, 8, 9, 10 years ago. So when you got ready to do the planning and decided you were going to do a French theme, did you pick a caterer or a restaurant, and did you have to go do like taste testings and things like that to pick out exactly what you wanted?
How much fun was that? Part of the fun is getting... You get some free meals out of it and get some samples. But, we had a great caterer who we did tastings of all the, both. We had one person who did the cake and then another group do the dinner. And some tastings for both of those. And our cake was shaped like the Arc de Triomphe in France. So everything was really strictly and almost humorously tied to the French theme. We had all the catering staff were wearing little French flag lapel pins, and when people walked from the ceremony area into the reception in the backyard, we had this kind of a tunnel of lights, and we hung up a little model of the Concorde, which used to fly to Paris, and it was an Air France Concorde, kind of strung up in these lights, and we had an audio recording in the background of the Charles de Gaulle airport sounds. So
oh, come on.
Ding, ding, ding.
That is great.
So we're really trying to transport Paris, people to Paris here in lovely Orange, California, trying to create that sensation of really going someplace unique. So it was a lot of fun.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Now, did you guys go on any type of a honeymoon?
We have not, because we spent every single penny on this wedding. But my hope is that maybe next year we can take a big vacation. And, since I keep telling Russ, since we went with the French theme for the wedding, we need to follow through with the honeymoon and take the kids to France. So we'll see if that happens. I don't know.
That would be really cool.
I need to sell a lot of books before then.
Well, then let's sell some books. Here's the quick reminder to everybody. If you are listening to the show tonight, whether it's live or in Technicolor, there are two links on the body of the show page, and all you have to do is click on them, and you can buy both of Kurgan's books, Songs for the New Depression, and then Gifts Not Yet Given. And the book that you really came on last year to talk about was Gifts Not Yet Given, because it was hot off the presses and it was the new big thing. You know, we've got this thing called the holidays that are coming up again. Now would be a perfect time for people to get this. Can you maybe give a little bit of a plug or three about what the book is about and why it got such a great reception last year?
Sure. You know, Gifts Not Yet Given was really inspired by my love of the holidays. I love all the holidays, some more than others, but I definitely gravitate towards the fall and winter holidays, and I wanted to create something that kind of celebrated those and yet was not a corny holiday story. So I crafted this book of short stories, and they each are tied to a holiday, but they're really much more about people having a moment of personal awakening. So you see somebody at some stage of their life, and you see what happens to them, which ultimately changes the direction that they were heading in. So some of the stories are funny, some are sad, some are, a little bit of both. But it was really a lot of fun to write and gave me a chance to explore a lot of different voices. A lot of the characters are LGBT, but not all of them are. And that was really important to me, too, because I feel like stories about the holidays are these, you know, typically a straight family or a straight person experiencing something. And, you know, for those of us who are LGBT, so much of our lives is built around the holidays. And sometimes, you know, for a lot of gay people, they come out to their families at holidays because maybe they are living somewhere else and they come home and they take that moment of face-to-face to tell their family, you know, who they authentically are. But so I wanted to somehow, you know, show people in all different walks of life and really to highlight these moments of personal awakening. Because for me, regardless of the holiday elements, I try to better myself on a regular basis, and I try to create changes to move myself forward. And that's what a lot of these characters are trying to do in different ways. Some are not successful and others are, but they're really trying to find a way to break through and move forward in life and connect with who they are authentically. So that's what it is. And you're right, it is a perfect book for the holidays. But it was a lot of fun to write, and I'm very happy with that. Got some great reviews, and so it ended up on a couple 10 best books lists and things like that. So it was a great experience.
Well, I think it's a great 10 best book for 2014 as well. So if you, and this is all sincerity, folks. I know Kurgan's a good guy, and, you know, he's very humble here on the show, but he's got a great book. If you are looking for a different gift idea instead of a fruitcake or a pair of socks or something that somebody won't like, I'm going to just tell you now, make it easy. Go buy 10 copies of it. You got plenty of time. You'll get free shipping on Amazon. Have them ship the books to you, and then give one out to your family and friends over the course of the holidays and tell them this will change their life for the better. And I think that you'll be the new favorite friend or relative come the holidays next year. So it's kind of like the gift that's going to, you know, bring something back to you tenfold. So go buy 10 copies today. That would be a good thing for you to do. So, Kurgan, what is your... Well, but it's true. If your book were terrible, I'd say let's talk about anything except your book. But you tell great stories. You're a brilliant writer. So where else are you doing writing right now?
Well, I write fairly regularly for Huffington Post and LGBTQ Nation. I have not posted in a while, but in fact, you know, all this talk about my recent marriage, and I've been working on something for those two sites. About the marriage, just about the importance of marriage equality, kind of, you know, why it really matters on a personal level. And so that is forthcoming. And as I mentioned, I'm working on my memoir, but my memoir, you know, it's tricky when you're writing about a real life event that my ex is obviously still around and sees our son regularly, and so knowing that I've got to tell the story in a respectful way, and yet
it's tough,
through,
challenges,
you know, yeah. So it's been a little longer road to hoe than the first two books. I thought the first two books really came very quick. Well, my first book took me 12 years to write. That doesn't sound quick, but it was written in fits and starts, and obviously trying to write when you've got kids is difficult. So I'd have to write in these stolen moments. So that took a long time, but when I would sit down to write it, it would come out of me very quickly. This memoir is taking its time coming. So
do you have
any? I'm not quite sure when it's going to be out.
Okay, so that was my next question. Do you have a deadline that you've set for yourself? But you know, I won't hold you at anything there. So tell us about the boys, Mason and Marcus. They are growing up like
mm-hmm.
weeds, and yep. I've seen some pictures of Mason in his football uniform, and I think that he's ready for the cover of GQ and Sports Illustrated if we're not careful.
Whew, boy, tell me about it. He's today we went through a whole exercise where he was explaining to me how he was going to ask his girlfriend to homecoming, and he had this elaborate plan where he was going to be putting a note in her locker, and then that note would direct her to another locker that was empty that would have a note in it, and that would take her somewhere else, and then finally she would be back at her locker, and I guess the locker next to hers is empty, so that one's going to have a teddy bear with a little heart and homecoming question mark. And I'm just thinking to myself as he's telling me all this, I'm like, oh, my God. You know, to have been in that delivery room and to cut the cord and to live through that moment and already have him here, you know, telling me about this girlfriend. And I'm just thinking, wow, things, you know, have moved very quickly.
So
blink
fast.
And time has passed.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you, What it does when you post pictures and you tell your story about how your family goes through just things every family goes through, it makes me appreciate the fact that you're as good of a parent as you are. Because you see so many things that from social media to just regular news and things like that, and you're like, holy cow, you people should not be recreating anything, or you don't need to be responsible for other human life, and because you're just poor examples. And to see what, you know, you and Russ are always doing, and, you know, I think, didn't you just take the kids on, if I use the term camping trip, is that the wrong term? But
mm-hmm.
you just came back from a big trip as well. So how did that go as a chaperone or as a leader for a group of kids? Do you have any hair left on your head?
You know, that was actually the kids and I went by ourselves. Russ could not get away, and you know, you were talking about, you know, honeymoons. That was basically my honeymoon from our wedding was, you know, a couple days at the Kern River with the kids, and I got to tell you, it was crazy. First of all, our little one, Marcus, had never been camping before. So for him, it was a huge event. And he has ADHD, and he likes structure. He likes to know where he's going, when he's going, exactly what to expect. And so we have these conversations repeatedly where we walk through, we're going here on this date, and here's what we're going to do, and da-da-da-da-da. And so to then pick up and drive several hours, and we arrived at this beautiful river campsite, and the Kern River still had water in it, which was great, and they do a lot of white water rafting there, and to have this kind of several night experience with the kids on my own was a trip. I mean, we had moments where all of a sudden we'd been alone at our campsite for the first two nights, and then this Asian family moved into the campsite next to us, and it was supposed to be a single family unit. I think these people had about 24 people with them. They put up about 7 tents and 2 pop-up easy ups, and I was just thinking, oh my God, you know, what's going on here? And you know, it was a good awakening for me, because I never thought about people of other cultures and how they camp, because to me camping is hot dogs,
right,
pancakes on the grill, you know, and they brought their rice cookers and, you know, were
oh, yeah,
making Asian meals for, you know, there at the river for for every meal. And it was just so entertaining because the kids were kind of, you know, they got this great glimpse into another culture. And at one point, it was, I think about, it was still daytime. And all of a sudden, this family cranked up the disco hits, and they were dancing to Madonna. And this one guy who clearly was gay, he had this blonde dyed hair, and he had was pulling up his shirt, and he was gyrating like Madonna. And they were all, like, capturing him on their phones, and it was just hysterical. And, you know, it was one of those great reminders to me of, as different as we all may be in some way, you know, there are unifying aspects that, you know, we all love to celebrate life, and we love to celebrate family and our connection with each other. And so it was a great experience for me and the kids just to hang out. And we did have a couple harrowing moments where we the kids and I went whitewater rafting, and Marcus, our little one, got swept off his raft. And
oh, no.
He ended up climbing up about a 30-foot cliff with our rafts and trying to escape this rapids area because it was too intense.
Too much.
And he was kind of a basket case, but we just had a lot of fun together. So
what a brave
time. I definitely
want to
speak for us.
Oh yeah. Well, okay. Well, better, I'd say better you than me. I have a friend of mine that I know through the OC Screenwriters workshop, and he's always going to Yosemite and always wanted to go camping. He goes, you know, one of these trips, you know, you need to come along with me. And I'm like, if there's a Hilton hotel and a beach, I'm there. I went camping as a kid. I appreciate what my parents were trying to give me as an experience. But, boy, I'll tell you, I would be really hard-pressed to do that. And you throw in the whitewater rafting here, Kurgan, and I'm just like, oh, that would send me over the edge. So I think you've got two brave ones with you to be able to go through that. So what are you guys going to be doing over the holidays? Do you have anything fun planned? What's going to be happening for you guys?
You know, the holidays are pretty traditional with us. We do a lot of home decorating, and I have quite a nutcracker collection. It was actually gifted to me. I had a partner who died back in 95, and he actually inspired my first book, which was really, it was not about him, but it was about the experience of somebody dying of AIDS and kind of his inner turmoil that he was going through, and it's played out fictionally, but when he died, he left me this amazing nutcracker collection, and so that's one of the highlights of my holidays is I love unpacking each of those, and a lot of them were given to him by his mom and different family members upon birthdays or holidays. They would traditionally give him a nutcracker, and he was very particular. They had to be German nutcrackers. If you gave him anything else, it would end up in the trash. But so he gifted these to me, and I've kind of continued the tradition with our kids, and every Christmas Eve they each get a nutcracker, and so our collection has grown and grown, and it's kind of crazy now, but I don't know what's going to happen when I die and these poor kids get saddled with 5 million nutcrackers, but that's for them to worry about. But you know, we're looking forward to the holidays, and we're planning a couple trips, you know, just during the fall. We're going to be taking a trip to Sonoma together and doing, you know, the fall experience of actually having some cool weather. For those people who are not in the OC or LA area right now, you know, we're going into another heat wave, and I think we're just done with the heat. We need some coolness. We need some green and some golden rust colors, and so we're really looking forward to creating fall on our own terms. Since the weather's not cooperating with us, we're going to go to where there is some fall color and just try to tap into some of that and rejuvenate our spirits a little bit, because I think we're, at least here in our house, we're over the heat. We're kind of exhausted.
And you know, I say this with all sincerity, I feel your pain. And then I have my folks who are back in Phoenix who are like, are you going to come out for a visit? And it's like, what's the temperature? My temperature dictates the love that I have for my parents, apparently. It's still 107. I don't love you that much yet. So, you know, can you get it down to, like, in the high 90s? And then I can figure out how to beat it. I totally agree. And, yeah, for everybody who's listening, we're going to be back in, like, the hundreds, I think, in the next couple of days, at least in the L.A. Area and in the inland. So, yeah, go enjoy that time.
At least you're near the beach.
Yes, God bless. And by the way, you guys are very welcome. Anytime you want to come down to the beach and hang out, even if it's just for a parking space, I don't blanketly do that. But to you guys, anytime you want to come down, we're 4 blocks from the beach. You just park the car and, you know, you go hang out for the day and come back and go home or, you know, hang out with me or the dogs or something like that. So you've got an open invitation there anytime. Speaking of dogs, you welcomed a new member to your family this year.
Yes. We have a beautiful collie, and his name is Toby. In fact, he turns 1 on Sunday. We bought him a little tiara. I'm not sure if he's going to wear it, but it says happy birthday. So we'll see how that goes. I don't know. But he's adorable. He just, unfortunately, he needs some major training, and he loves to jump on people, and he's jumping on my 85-year-old mother and almost knocking her over. So we need to get some training in here ASAP. But he's adorable, and he's really, not only has he brought a lot of life and love to our family, but I think, you know, I mentioned Marcus and ADHD, and I think for him in particular, it has been a great experience because he's able to take care of and put his focus on someone else other than himself and really, you know, shower this dog with love and affection, and it's been a calming and, you know, healing influence for him. So that's been a nice bonus.
Good. Well, and I guess that would bring up another question I have. Do you, and there probably shouldn't be any, this is one of those silly questions that is probably a silly question. Have you had any challenges as gay parents bringing up 2 kids that, if, you know, do they have any special challenges? If so, you know, how do you address that? Or do you both agree on parenting styles?
You know, that's an excellent question. I mean, there's several different elements there. I think Russ and I are very different people. We have very different approaches to parenting. He definitely is more the strict disciplinarian. I tend to give a lot of wiggle room. And so, you know, occasionally we have our issues between us where, you know, we have to sit down and go, okay, we need to be very firm on this one point here. And ultimately we always end up agreeing. And we made a rule from the very beginning that we back each other up because the first thing kids will do is try to divide you up and say, well, you know, Dad said this or Pappy said this. And so we're constantly reaffirming that, you know, we never back down from what another has said. But, you know, I think I have been really pleasantly surprised at how easy it has been for us here in Orange County. And for those people who know nothing about us, both Russ and I are 2 white guys and we have 2 African-American kids. So we couldn't blend in and act straight even if we wanted to. So from the time the kids were, you know, babies, we go to Target or, you know, Trader Joe's or Costco or wherever, and, you know, we're white guys with African-American kids. So clearly we stand out, and if people wanted to make an issue, I'm sure they could, but we've never had an issue. And, in fact, you know, I think we were looking for it initially. We were waiting for that response, and kind of we'd go into a restaurant and kind of almost immediately assess who was around us and if there were any threats in the area, which is just something I think we do protectively anyways. But we kept waiting for anything negative. And, you know, we got a couple odd looks, but usually I think it was more about people trying to figure us out than anything to do with not liking who we are. And I grew up in Orange County, and my parents are ultra conservative, and my dad was a Republican, George Duke Majan. He was his campaign treasurer at one point with his business partner. So, you know, they're very entrenched in all of that, and Orange County used to be mainly that. And you know, so far we've not really had any problems. I will say that during the Prop 8 battle, I think that was a really difficult time emotionally for Russ and I because where we are in Orange, you know, you would drive down the streets and you would see these, you know, yard signs of these horrific yellow and blue, you know, the perfect straight family, and, you know, you preserve this as if we were trying to attack it. And it really did an issue on us. And it made us feel less safe. And you know, I got a little crazy during the campaign too, because there was one point where I was driving down the freeway and I noticed this woman driving next to me, and she had painted all these "Yes on Prop 8" slogans on her car. And I thought, okay, who is this crazy bitch? And then I thought to myself later, I was like, you know what? Why is it that I don't feel that impassioned? I had, you know, my one bumper sticker that said "No on 8" and we
right.
had our yard signs, which kept getting stolen, and so we put more up. But I decided that I was going to turn into that crazy lady, but I was going to do it in a very gay way. So I went to Michael's, and I got
uh-huh.
some, you know, stick-on lettering, and I had these, I put on our car, you know, these messaging, like, "Our kids want to see us get married." And,
oh, wow.
You know, just what was interesting, though, is, you know, I would pull up into the elementary school parking lot, and they do a drop-off like most schools do these days, where the cars are all lined up and the kids are
oh,
getting
yeah.
out. And, you know, I would see bumper stickers in front of me that would, you know, be "Yes on 8," and I was just like, oh, my gosh. And, you know, it was a little difficult, because I had to be the crazy one at that moment and had these messaging on my car. And it was important to me, but, you know, I could see other parents kind of shying away from me, and it was not, you know, the most welcoming of time, where you really feel nurtured and you know, to walk around in your community and for the first time ever really not feel safe, that was a little jarring. But, you know, happily now, the same people who were giving me dirty looks usually are very friendly, and people have come around. I think a lot of people have had awakenings, and so it's really been ultimately, you know, a positive experience in the end.
Can I ask, and I'm somebody who's like so not political, so when I ask this, it's just coming from a place of not knowing. Is it correct in the understanding of how that all played out, is that the way that all of this was written, that yes meant no and no meant yes, and there was just so many people that were really confused about what their stance was, and if they really knew what the, I don't want to say the right, but the right answer was, or what a no really meant and what a yes really meant, they probably would have voted differently, and the whole thing probably would not have even have, you know, been an issue as far as having it been, you know, taken out and, you know, gone up to the Supreme Court and all that good stuff that went on over the next 4 years.
Well, I think you're definitely right in terms of the language was very confusing. People did not know what they were voting for, but part of it was really, I believe, you know, the other side had a very compelling argument. They made it all about how somehow kids were being threatened. And, of course, and almost any parent is going to want to protect their kids, and that's so instinctual that it's really hard to argue with that. Our side did not do a very good job of countering that, and we had a lot of messaging which was, you know, by LGBT-friendly people, but it didn't really, at the time, our messaging did not tell gay people's stories. Since then, other states who have had similar battles have had more effective messaging, where they really have talked about the people and what's at stake and their rights and who they are as people, and it's really humanized us in a way, whereas, you know, before we were the boogeyman. And what was interesting to me is recently, last year, they were trying to get something on the ballot here in California, which is an anti-trans proposition, where they were scaring people about the possibility of having your child go to an intersex bathroom or shower. And the other side was pulling out the same stuff they did during the Prop 8 campaign. They were really making it seem like someone scary is out there and they're going to attack your child. And I thought to myself, oh, my God, I mean, it worked for them last time, so it's going to work this time. And although I didn't see a lot of things here in Orange County, last fall we were up in Julian, which is outside of San Diego, and it's a great little place that we typically go to during the autumn. As I mentioned, we go on these autumn trips, and it's a great old town. It's a mining company. There's a lot of fall color. They're known for apple pie there's tons of bakeries and antique shops and all this, and I looked over and I saw this line of people lined up to sign these petitions, and I realized it was for this anti-trans proposition they were trying to get on the ballot, and I thought, oh my God, here people are actively, you know, lining up. You've got people 10 deep to sign a petition to get this on the ballot, and I thought, you know, this is definitely going to, they're going to get enough signatures and it's going to be on the ballot, and thank God, for whatever reason, this time people seem to be more aware. They know who LGBT people are now. We're more active and we're telling our stories
visible.
And we're more visible.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we're not the threat that we were back during the Prop 8 days when people didn't totally know or understand us and understand that basically we're all the same. We all want the same things. We want freedom. We want to live our life with dignity and respect. And they did not necessarily know all of that. So I think, you know, as time goes on and they see who we are, I think, you know, happily that other side has not had the success with the anti-trans initiative that they would have, you know, had that been done 10 years ago. So that did not make the ballot this year, which is great.
And I think the thing that just stuns me, I just think, you know, we're in like this daze or confuse or there's something going on because it just cannot be possible. We're in 2014 and people are signing a petition to discriminate against a trans person. You know, I mean, I'm speculating here, but so correct me if I'm wrong as somebody who's in our community with me. I think the last thing a trans person wants to do is raise any type of anything if they need to go to the bathroom. They want to go to the bathroom and
right.
feel comfortable in their skin and who they are. It is not the trans person who is out there being a pedophile. It is not the gay person who's out there being a pedophile. Statistics
no.
show, and that's a whole other show when we're wrapping things up and we want to wrap on a happy note. So, but, you know, statistics show it is the quote-unquote straight married male that is out there statistically cruising kids and doing the things that you are saying gay people or trans people are doing. It's just not, it's statistically not proven and statistically not a viable argument. It is shameful that people are like lemmings just jumping off the cliff thinking that that is an acceptable way to think in 2014, especially in a progressive state like California where you think, okay, everybody's got their head. I think maybe that was part of the problem, and you know, when Prop 8 came along is that, you know, the gay community is like, well, who is going to vote against it? And then, you know, you just throw some confusing language in there, and the next thing you know, okay, our rights are gone. What the heck happened? So
right. Anyway,
that's, you know, again, well, sorry to go down that path, but I'm just always amazed,
you know,
that people think that. Go ahead. Sorry about that.
Well, I was going to say, you know, I would encourage anyone who's interested in kind of the trans perspective to look up on Huffington Post and look up my name. And one of the interviews that I did on Huffington Post was with this woman who her daughter is trans. And they actually go to my church, which is how I met them. But they've been on Anderson Cooper and Ricky Lake and some other shows. And she and I had a great long discussion of what it was like for her and her daughter to, you know, to come out as trans. And although they've been, you know, brave enough to come out and speak out publicly, most trans people want to live their lives and go about their lives just as normally as anyone else. They don't want to make a big to-do out of it, and they're just trying to live as their authentic selves. And I think the more that people realize that and move forward, you know, it humanizes them.
I agree. Kurgan, our hour has come to a close. I always play a song to kind of like, you know, everybody kind of wind down at the night, even if it's everybody dance now or something crazy like that. So if we've got a minute or two left, is there anything that we need to make sure the listeners know about you, your family, your books, public appearances, nutcrackers, and where to only buy them from, anything like that that you want to share before we wrap up the night tonight?
I would just encourage people to check out my website. It's Kurgan at edwards-stout.com, and do a Google on me. You'll find me on Facebook and Twitter, and hopefully follow me and just see what I'm up to. But I really appreciate the time to have this dialogue with you, and you've touched on a lot of different topics tonight, so it's been great to have this time
with you. Yeah, it's fun. And I know that you keep saying this, come over for dinner, and in all sincerity, it's like I have on my calendar, on my to-do list, I need to figure this out and then to send you a date. Will this work? So.
Well, that's what happens when you have a nightly talk show. You kind of get
there's the dilemma.
Uh-huh.
We could do just a live broadcast from your dinner table or something like that one night. That would be
there
fun.
You go.
Okay, mm-hmm. Maybe we could do something like that.
Except,
we'll talk about that.
Except you're going to have to be dealing with my kids, which is a whole other thing. You're going to
that's cool.
Have,
no,
like,
see, that would be fun.
Your ratings are going to shoot through the roof.
Through the roof, because they'll be tweeting during mm-hmm. dinner. Okay,
exactly.
Listen what I'm going to say next. Okay, everybody go check out Kurgan's information on the body of the show. Like him on Facebook. Go buy his books. Buy 10 copies of Gifts Not Yet Given and give them out to your family and friends over the holidays this year. And we'll be back. Roadmap people. Tomorrow night, Dr. Annie Ulrich, she is back for the October Energy Update. She'll also do dream interpretation and talk about intuitive stuff. And then on Friday, we've got Cliff Beach. We're going to play two of his recent EPs with and here's the other thing. I've got to figure out how I'm going to go to Downtown Disney and go see Derek and Romaine and get a picture of Derek, who signed two of his books to me, before the show starts at 7 o'clock. So it's going to be kind of like a little wild goose chase for me on Friday before the show at 7. But with that, folks, thanks, Kurgan, again, for being on the show. Go support him. Go make friends in your community. Be safe, and we will see you live on Thursday night with Dr. Annie Ulrich. Come back, everybody. We'll see you later.
You've been listening to
Rated G Radio.